This is exactly right.
Forgive me for interrupting. I'm Bridger Weiniger, host of I Said No Gifts on Exactly Right. Each week, I invite my favorite people in comedy over to chat, and they always bring a gift. We're coming up on our 200th episode, and every episode is a gem. I have welcomed all kinds of great guests, including Cola Scola, Bowen Yang, Robbie Hoffman. It goes on and on and on. And you don't want to miss the 200th episode with the great Maria Bamford. What does she bring me? Find out April 25th. New episodes every Thursday. Follow I Said No Gifts wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you leaving or are you on your way back home? Either way, we want to be there. Doesn't matter how much baggage you claim. Give us a time and date, terminal and gate. We want to send you off in style. We want to welcome you back home. Tell us all about it. Were you scared or was it fine?
Mouth horn.
With Karen and Chris.
Welcome to Do You Need a Ride? This is Chris Fairbanks.
And this is Karen Kilgariff.
Hello, Karen.
Hi, Chris. How are you?
I'm good. There's been some drama, some pet drama in my neighborhood.
Why?
Well, there's a dog that is muscular like a human. Yeah. This dog looks like The Rock.
Yep.
And there's two separate occasions where I'm pulling up to my place and I didn't see it happen, but that dog just bit a passing dog on a leash.
Oh, right.
It's happened twice now. So that's just the times I've seen it. And I do feel like a weird pet detective because I heard him say to the woman who was checking her dog, which had blood on its neck, like this is a big pit combined with another scary dog. And he said, oh, he never does this. And I'm like, ah. 4 or 5 months ago, I remember fully picking up a dog. And like this dog, I don't know how many dogs this dog has bitten, but he jumps over the fence.
Oh.
And I've pet this scary dog, and he's sweet to humans, but he wants to murder little dogs.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, this cat that is my neighbor's, that they called the Mooch. His color says the Mooch. That's because you don't take care of him, and he's skinny. And now he just waits at my door, and I let him in. He's asking me to be his new owner, but he's got a collar on, and it's just these folks had a baby. I leave my windows open. You can learn a lot. Anyway,
Here's the thing. You can always take a collar off. That cat doesn't know its name is the Mooch. It's like suddenly that's Charlie McCarthy,
yeah,
and you're done. That's your cat.
I think I should do that, but I did talk to them. I was like, hey, are you guys the Mooch's parents? They're like, yeah, that's our cat. And I'm like, you just had a baby, right? Because I could see the baby. I could see what's happening. They don't care about the cat anymore. They have a human baby. Should I ask them next time I see them, hey, do you want me to adopt your cat? I do like
No, they don't want you to. They don't want you to.
So I have to break the law and steal their cat.
You're
giving me permission?
I was doing a joke. Now I feel like I need to say, hey, don't do that.
Okay, I won't do that. But I am going to let him visit. I don't feed him either.
Here's the thing. Don't feed him because then he'll be at your house all the time. But LA cats, when they are left outside, they go and live entire second secret lives.
I guess so.
I mean, like, that's a very common thing, so.
And because this cat's name is the Mooch, I think he has a history of befriending neighbors. But he asks for nothing. He just comes in and sits and stares at me. It's actually kind of creepy, but I've grown to like him. Whatever. There's a lot of pet drama, and I just wanted to get it off my teats.
What if you adopted a big fat cat, and then you got it a tag that and named it the Gooch? And then cat wars. Then the drama goes up 10. I'm just saying, jump in there. Be a part of it.
Yeah, I should be part of the community.
You know who else should be part of the community? our guest today.
Oh, God, you're so good at these guest segues.
Jump on this guest segue with me and we'll go pick up our guest for the day. You've seen her at clubs and colleges all over the country.
A lot of colleges.
She's also been on this podcast a handful of times.
Yes.
I think.
Three?
At least.
I think so.
Three, maybe? Yeah, two or three.
She's a... Ixnay, oh, I'm doing the intro. She's been on this podcast three times. You know her. You love her. That's right. It's Fortune Feimster.
Fortune.
Woo!
Yeah. This is a real honor to be back.
You aren't doing colleges anymore, are you, Fortune?
I was about to say no, yeah. And I literally have a college next Thursday.
Yes, see? I told you. And is it all over the country?
I don't do many because colleges, your soul hurts after a lot of those gigs. Mm.
Yeah. Yeah. Oof. We've established that for sure.
Yeah. So rough.
There's only a handful of good college gigs.
But I don't know why. I was like, yeah, it sounds good.
Is yours at noon?
It's at like 7 p.m. and it's in a way too big of a theater. Sometimes you want to tell these colleges, like, let's lower the bar a little bit because no college promotes the shows.
Yeah.
I don't know why they don't promote them. And then when like 50 people show up, they go, it's fine. We had to spend the money anyway. You go, okay, all right.
Right. There is they were breathing down our necks to spend this money.
Yeah.
So don't worry about it. Can we give you more?
Fine. I once had a hockey team come to my show in a college in Boston, and they told me that they got in trouble with their coach, and they were allowed to pick their punishment, and my show was part of their punishment.
Wait a minute.
So I heckled these guys the entire show.
Oh, okay. Did they say we want to be roasted, sort of?
They were in the back there, but it was like 30 guys. And, you know, that's not usual. And they were very like jock bro-y guys.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I literally stopped the show. I said, I have to ask, like, you guys in the back, like, you're not my normal crowd. What brings you here? And the guy goes, we got in trouble and we're allowed to pick our punishment, so we picked your show.
That was the I hope that you really let a lot of people think that stand up, you're just, it's part of it. It's totally normal that you're going to get roasted by the comedian.
Yeah.
People go, oh, I don't want to sit up front because you're going to mess with me. Oh my God, in a perfect world, we would never even interact. I would do my material and you'd be quiet like you're at a play.
Yeah. I don't normally roast anyone, nor do I do that. But, and they were in the very, very back. And I just, so the whole show, I just kept going back to them going, just nailing these guys. This was a while ago, but it was a real treat that will always stay with me.
Do you honestly think it was a punishment or do you think that guy was being sassy?
It was the entire team was there. It was 100% punishment. And like, I think he thought like he was complimenting me, like, hey, but we picked you. Like, it was either, 50 suicides or you.
Yeah. We were either have to do a half hour of cardio. That's so funny.
Or sit here through this big old lesbian stand-up set.
I was doing some college back east, and at the end, I know I've told the story 15 times on this show, but we don't care about stuff like that.
That's right.
So feel free to repeat anything.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
Good.
Even the t-shirt that you wore last time.
Yes.
Just kidding. That was what you said.
It's probably the same.
No.
But in near the end of my set, and this was at the beginning of this run, I think I had maybe 25 minutes of material. Yeah. And then by the end, I had kind of worked it out with myself enough so that it was lasting at least 45.
Oh,
at
nice.
At least the like legal limit, whatever. But near the end of my set, the football team came in from like they had just finished practice. So literally holding their gear and stuff.
Right.
And they sat in the back. And I had this bit about the National Cheerleading Championships, and I was just kind of being an asshole and being mean about watching the National Cheerleading Championships. And at one point, this guy goes, like mid-joke, this guy goes, "Hey, my mama's a cheerleader." And then everyone starts laughing. And I, of course, start laughing because it was fucking hilarious. And he did it really loud. He was like, it was like a... like he was an opera singer. And then I was like, that's the funniest it's going to get tonight. Thanks, everybody. And I just wrapped the show up.
You're like, good night. Like,
you nailed it. It's not going to get better than that.
That's amazing. My mom is a cheerleader.
My mom is a cheerleader.
And what if she was? Yeah, what if she was?
What if she was? Then she can come fight me.
Yeah, they have cheerleading parents.
Yes.
It's a hardcore sport.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, it is.
When I do colleges, I just can't believe how young they are. I thought I was such a grown up when I was in school, and they're children.
Oh,
they're totally
they're
children.
Babies.
Yeah.
It's really weird to. I go on stage and I go, what are we going to relate to with each other? Why am I here?
I do. Anyone should do their due diligence as a host and do some Wikipedia. I was reading about you, Fortune, some things I didn't know.
Oh, yeah?
But at your graduation, there was an actress that spoke, because at mine, J.K. Simmons spoke. He went to that college, that
actor. Oh, yeah?
Wow. And then you ended up being her assistant in L.A.?
Yeah.
Is that true?
It's true, yeah. She was the commencement speaker. She was an actress from North Carolina, and she got... asked to speak at our graduation. I was a student speaker and crushed.
Yeah.
And we hit it off. And
so that's what it was. You crushed. Mm-hmm. And she was like, oh my God, I've never seen a student speaker crush like that. Will you come work for me?
Well, she just kind of was like, let me know if you ever need anything. And I was just like, what am I going to need from an actress in Los Angeles?
Right. Well, it's just a testament to your likability, because I just read a couple sentences and I'm like, oh, yeah, I assume that's what happened. But then it went on to say that her neighbor was like a LA Weekly journalist or something, and then you got a job with her neighbor.
Look at that. I just got a lot of jobs through people.
So that's true too?
That's true too. Yeah, I randomly hired to be her assistant. I didn't start till a year later because, long story short, I moved to Spain for a year.
Oh, shit.
And when I got home, the job was still available. So this was 2003. I moved out to LA not knowing what I was doing. I had no desire to be an actor or comedian. I had never done comedy. I had done theater and I stunk. so I was like, I don't know what I'm doing, but this might be a cool life experience. And then I sucked as an assistant because I was a baby. I didn't know LA. Yeah, I didn't know where anything was. And I'm trying to flip through Thomas guides while not getting hit by other cars. And I was there maybe a year, maybe a little longer. But her neighbor, wrote for the LA Daily News and was basically that speech. She goes, I heard from your graduation speech that you can write. Do you want to cover?
God, you killed that speech.
That speech. I mean, it was really good, I guess. Mm-hmm. And she said, do you want to cover like movie premieres and events for me like once or twice a week at night? And I was like, yeah, because I suck at being an assistant. So I did them both for a while. And then that led to another journalism job that I had for the next, 6 years.
Oh, wow. That's so cool that it's, like, the first person you met and then the second person you met when you moved here.
So weird. Because I didn't know anyone else, and it was such a scary thing to move to L.A. I mean, I'm from a town of 10,000 people, so I'm like, what am I doing? And it was hard. It was hard to make friends. I was just, like, professionally, it was, like, cool that I just... suddenly was a journalist. If I wanted to be a journalist, I would have been like, hey, I made it. But I discovered improv doing the Groundlings because I wanted to make friends.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And so comedy only came because I was lonely and wanted to make friends.
That tracks. That makes perfect sense.
Yeah. And a lot of my friends I still have from those Groundlings days.
Well, it's oddly not that long ago. Like, I remember when we both were in the waiting room at the improv for Last Comic Standing,
oh my
and you
God.
Kept advancing That was what, 2005 or six? Like,
that was 2010.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, all right. That tracks then.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was broke. That journalism job actually came to an end right around that same time because all these newspapers were folding and they had to let me go. And so that was kind of like, I only did Last Comic Standing because I was like, I don't know how I'm going to pay my bills. nobody wants to hire me for any comedy related anything. And it was just like a, you know, one last grasp at straws. And
that turned it around. I was there for that, remember?
I know, yeah, Karen. I was calling Karen because I had met Karen through Akbar shows. And I was like, begged Karen to help me write jokes because I only had like 10, 15 or 15 minutes of material. I'm like, Karen! She was like my savior.
But also, you know, I wrote on that season of Last Comic Standing because Paige was my savior, giving me jobs when I just had no jobs. I had the hugest mortgage. And so I, with Hugh Moore, was writing patter for Craig Robinson, who hosted that season.
Yeah, that's right.
And watched all of you guys do that and go through the heartbreak of being on Last Comic Standing. No one... It seems to me, having watched it from behind the scenes a couple times, it's a very painful process for everybody, no matter how far they get or don't get or ever. Every comic seems to get their heart super broken on that show. Or
Yeah. I think the first year I did it, I enjoyed it. But after that, nothing but sadness. And then as a comic, you don't really get to watch anyone else. You're just waiting in a room, a holding area.
Yeah.
But yeah, I remember Fortune, you coming in, and clearly it had just gone well. And all these cameras came in. Like, they didn't follow everyone else into the green room. And so that's how I knew you did great. I didn't see a moment of it, but we were all...
They were, the camera people just started following me a bunch of places.
Yeah.
And people were very mystified because no one really knew who I was. Mm-hmm. I didn't know any of the, I knew a handful of the LA comics, but there were all these New York comics that I had no idea who they were. Like, that was when Nikki Glaser and Rachel Feinstein and Michelle Buteau, they were all there. I didn't know who anyone was. I knew Michelle briefly.
Tommy Jonagan.
Yeah, I didn't know him.
Yeah.
I knew like Taylor Williamson and that was like it. So he and I would walk to the Galleria together in Glendale during filming. So
this was pre-Americana. This is how long ago that was. Crazy. A whole mall wasn't there.
Yeah.
It's insane.
And it is funny how you get wrapped up. Like, you definitely get wrapped up in the experience because if I had kept going, I truly would have had no material. And I remember like getting eliminated and being like sad. Like, the camera starts coming in closer, trying to see if they'll catch a tear.
Yeah.
Rolling down your face. And they make you like really invested in it. You're like, I didn't move on. But then like afterwards, Paige was like, yeah, but you didn't have any more material. And I'm like, I know, but still.
I love those early days. I remember walking in on one of those shows, one of those like, you know, I think it was down to 8 people or something, and walking in, I think it's the Arrow, not the Arrow Theater.
Oh,
that theater in Glendale.
Oh, the Alex?
The Alex Theater.
Yeah.
Right? Where, and like the audience was lined up.
Yeah.
And I had been somewhere else and I had to come around the corner and walk through the front doors. And so I just had like, you know, it was like I was a producer essentially. Mm-hmm. And I remember walking by and then just being like, I had a stomachache for you guys. And it was that thing of like, this is the part of stand-up, or I guess show business, because regular stand-up never has that vibe. You're just never in that part of it. But like, competing and judging and comparing stand-ups makes no fucking sense.
No.
It just doesn't. It's like room to room, show to show. Everybody has a different time. It's all mental. And it's mental, and it is the audience. It's like, it's... Mm-hmm. How comfortable you can get yourself in the position that you're in. But with a thing like that, where it was like 1,000 people, I mean, that theater was humongous. It was intense. I was so grateful I didn't have to worry about that part of it. I was just like, whoo, behind the camera.
Yeah, I was so grateful. I'd get eliminated way before the theater portion.
You're like, I'm good at just the Hollywood improv. Let's leave it there. I don't want to go to that dumb theater.
Yeah, that's as far as I took it. It's like, I feel comfortable here. And Paige has always been the sweetest. And I, in an interview a post interview, they said, "What are you going to do now?" And I'm like, "Just put on a disguise and come audition again tomorrow." And then she's like, "Will you actually do that?" And I'm like, "Okay." So I came the next day with a mustache.
Oh, that's
so
funny.
"Hi, I'm Christian Fairchild. I'm a New York man." And it was kind of an inside joke. And then I made it to the semifinals as a character. But they didn't want to go into that whole story. They just showed my original crappy set.
Yeah.
So it didn't even make sense. Whatever. But I didn't. That was fun, at least. I love that Paige let me do that.
That is funny.
She's like, "Yeah, whatever."
It's always great when the people in charge are actually very funny themselves,
right?
And know how they know funny people and they know good ideas.
Yeah. Even if the audience hated me, she liked me.
Yep, that's right.
That's all that matters, because she's a tough critic. So that's high praise.
She hates everybody.
She hates everyone.
Yeah, yeah. I can safely say Paige doesn't hate me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I still to this day get nervous anytime I tape any form of stand-up.
Yeah.
It's nerve-wracking, because in a live show, you're like, "Yeah, if I miss a word, who cares? You'll make stuff up as you go. You'll piece things together. You might forget one thing, but it doesn't really, you know, whatever the order is." But when you're filming, I do still get those butterflies.
Maybe it's because I'm not religious, but were you nervous shooting your special in a church? I don't know why that would make it be just an extra voice, like, "Oh, you should have been religious."
I did feel the Lord was judging me the whole time.
Yeah.
Well, I had been asked to do shows for this Charlotte Comedy Festival, and that's where they booked me, was in that theater. And then when we sold my special, we go, "Oh, well, actually, I'm doing shows in this theater in the fall." And I had never seen it, so I had no idea about it. I just saw pictures of it, and it looked really cool, and it was a pretty theater. And it wasn't until we finalized everything that I started looking up information on it, and they go, "This is also a church." And I was like, "Oh, what?"
Just giant stained glass windows. Yeah, yeah.
I didn't know. I didn't know.
Okay.
It just seemed like, but then like when I started looking at my material, I was like, "This is actually pretty perfect," because I talk about, you know, growing up in the church and how that was like my early childhood, and then obviously veered off from that at some point. But so it seemed kind of like this weird full circle moment of like, now I'm in a church, this out gay comedian, and I tricked all of you into thinking you were in a theater, but you're actually in a church.
Oh, I 100% thought that was like your childhood Methodist church. I didn't know it was a theater. It's clearly a church.
My childhood Methodist church is just red carpet everywhere. So much red carpet.
That must have been like the cheaper carpet or something, because it doesn't seem... were you really Methodist, or are you just saying that?
Oh, I really was, yeah.
That's hilarious. Because I feel like in Catholic churches, red and burgundy is usually what the carpet color is too.
Yeah.
Try to get a runner in any other color. They're always red because of Hollywood.
I think red is part of the Methodist like emblem, or like it's all always red stuff. So
yeah, the logo is a cross with like a little red sash on it, or it's flames. I can't remember.
And so somebody was just like, "Let's go all red,
go with it."
And it's so much red, it's very jarring when you walk in there. You're like, "Whoa, it's really red in here." At Christmas, it's nice.
Oh yeah. It's got to be. That's all I think of when I think of churches. I think Christmas.
What church did you go to?
Oh, it was in River Runs Through It. It was like famously the church that the dad was the preacher at.
Oh.
And it's in the movie and everything. Tom Skerritt.
Wow.
That was a good movie for Brad Pitt looks-wise. He was very handsome in that movie. Other times, just kidding.
Yeah. Other times he's hard to look at, but
other
that
times,
one film.
Ooh, real fugly. He was very handsome in that movie.
He looks good fly fishing, that Brad Pitt.
He does. Something about those long locks and fly fishing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Growing up around that, in where exactly they shot A River Runs Through It, where there are three rivers that go through town, there's so much pressure to be a fisherman.
Were you a fisherman?
A beautiful fisherman?
I've never once even tried it.
Never?
Maybe once.
I've been fly fishing. It's pretty fun. But it was in I went in Alaska where like you throw out a line and you're going to catch like 20 salmon.
Mm. Yeah, I think the time that you're supposed to like have the fly just hover over the water, you whip it and it comes back and the fish is supposed to jump out of the water to get your fly. But every time I did it, that's why I said I've never really done it, because I've just lazily let it float on the surface of the water and then a fish gets it and it's like, oh, look at me.
Look at me, I did it.
And everyone around you is frustrated, like, well, you did it wrong.
You did it. You didn't let it hover.
Yeah, you gotta let it hover.
That's why you don't fish, Chris, is because it sounds really competitive and like there's a bunch of fishermen ready to criticize.
Yeah.
It is. It's very competitive in the small group you go with.
These judgy fishermen.
You, Tom Skerritt, Brad Pitt, just on your back, at your throat.
We're all wearing the same pair of dumb waiters.
Dumb waiters.
That's totally different. Waiters. Just regular waiters.
Regular waiters. Fortune, Annalise, our producer, did some research for us.
Oh.
Have we talked about the fact that you went to a debutante ball when you were a teen?
I don't know if you and I have talked about it. I mentioned it in my Netflix special, but we just like, I kind of skimmed over it because Paige, speaking of Paige Hurwitz, made me talk about it.
Yes.
Because not many people knew that I am in fact a debutante. And she goes, you have to tell people this. I go, why? It's embarrassing.
Wait, it's a caliber that you achieve like at a pageant level?
There's no achievement to it. It's like your mom, like if your mom was one, they'll oftentimes like ask the daughter of the mom to be one. But it's this hoity-toity thing. And Paige thought it was interesting because I grew up not having money. And she just thought poor debutante was hilarious. And long story short, my mom's family had a lot of money back in the day. Her dad was a very successful contractor who built like schools and churches and houses all over North Carolina. And then he died when she was like 17 unexpectedly. And my grandmother, through a series of bad like business decisions and other family drama, lost basically all the money that he left her. By the time I was like coming up, there was no money. And my dad did not come. My dad came from like a trailer, like he hitchhiked to school. So very different worlds that my parents had. And so I grew up more, I had like manners and stuff from my grandmother always instilling that in me. But I grew up more of like hanging out, you know, at the Hooters, eating chicken wings, watching NASCAR. And then I suddenly am like about to go into my senior year of high school and I get this invite to be a debutante. And I'm like, God, no, this is horrific. I don't want to do this. And my mom, trying to relive her glory days, was like, you will do this. I was like held hostage. I was like, I begrudgingly had to go through.
What are they judge you on? Like, what? This is a dinner fork. This is a salad fork.
Yeah,
yeah. Opera length gloves. That's what I'm picturing.
Yeah. Oh. Well, so the summer before your senior year of high school, it's a lot of luncheons. It's a lot of manners. Like, here's how you know, place settings. Here's what you do. It's a lot of like little sandwiches, and you're just chatting with like women of a certain age who have money, and you're just like, thank you for the luncheon. You know, it's all very like being nice to old people who have a lot of money.
Yeah, getting ready to socialize with those old people. Yeah, this is what you're marrying into.
Yeah, that's right after you graduate high school. And then Christmas of your freshman year of college, you have to come home and do the debutante ball, where you wear a large gown that looks like a wedding dress and the big white gloves. Your brother or your father walks you down and presents you to society. It's so...
yeah.
It's so, like, not me. But my mom was just being like, oh! You know, like, she was so in her element. And when I was trying to figure out the jokes for the special, like... I didn't know how we were going to pay for it. And I was like, we can't do this. How are we going to pay for it? And I would come home and the couch would be missing because my mom sold it to pay for the luncheon.
Oh, you're kidding. You have to, it's like an investment.
Yeah, you have to pay for that dumb stuff.
Can you win? Do you win at the end?
No one wins.
Is there a winner?
It's, you know, the South, like old society, like, you know, the keeping up with the Joneses kind of vibe. It's, you know, it's even more antiquated now. I don't know. I think they still have it. I have no idea.
I think it's a Southern thing. That kind of thing is not
up in
Montana. Yeah.
It started in like Paris, I think.
It's national. Mm-hmm. It's for rich people. That's why most of us don't know anything about it. Because it's essentially like you don't win, but you are socializing with the mothers of the men that hopefully you will date and then marry because they want money to marry money so that it all stays at the top, essentially.
I didn't meet anyone. No husbands.
You didn't? I'm sorry.
I know. No husbands. So it was a real bust.
You didn't land a man, so you had to go to LA and become a journalist instead.
What's that?
Oh, the painter's coming in.
Painter.
For today, are you coming? Is that it? Are you coming back or... Thank you.
I want him to come in and say some of the things he did to the house. Well,
told us that they're like, this is the last day. We're not coming back. But that's why I was like, are you coming back?
And he's like, we'd love to come back. Thank you.
Because he didn't finish everything. Anywho.
I'm telling you, I've been watching this old house. I always knew about this old house.
Yeah.
And I didn't know it was such a regional, like, Boston thing. And they show, like, time-lapsed footage of them actually building houses. It's fascinating.
Yeah.
I like all the interviews. I like even when they're talking about plumbing fixtures. So I'd love it if you could call that guy in and just say what he was doing today.
He was poking his head through the door like, bye-bye. I was like, well, we still have several rooms left. He's like, bye-bye.
See you, friend. See you soon.
We've been going through like 3 months of renovations and this was supposed to be the final day, but I guess Monday's the final day.
That's right.
Yeah.
It always lasts so much longer than anyone expects.
Yeah.
Is it an old house that you're modernizing?
I've had this house for like 8 years and just have barely touched it in all the time I've had it. And we just started looking around, like everybody going, we like, you know, the walls are dingy and we got our floor. Our floors are old. The house is like 1947. So the floors needed some love. We got them stained and sanded. And our furniture, like our couch was so bad that we tried to like donate it. And they were like, no, thank you. And we were like, oh, it was that bad.
You should sell it and get into another debutante package.
Yes.
So yeah, I don't live my life very fancy, as you can see, but we just did some of the basic stuff, but these painters, it's been a journey. We're like, is that supposed to be a giant bubble in the hallway? They're like, I don't know.
Who can say, really?
Who can say? You're like, is that how the wall's supposed to be patched? It's like six holes are jabbed into the wall with like some putty over it. You're like, I don't think it's supposed to look like that.
I don't know.
So, yeah, you know, especially when there's two ladies involved, everybody looks at you like, what do you want? And you're like, we just want pretty walls.
When I was early in college, I painted my mom's house because she asked me to. And I didn't really know what I was doing, but I had some friends show me some stuff. But I went and looked at it recently, totally just trespassing because I don't know who lives there now. But I wanted to see. I really think I did a good job. Like all the lines are straight. I didn't use any tape. It's all done. I mean, it was outside. It's kind of, you can get away with more with outside than indoors. But yeah. There should be no bubbling.
No.
Well, if it's bubbling, it means the lesbian part of me does know this. If it's bubbling, it's troubling. I should have told him that. It means it wasn't sanded properly.
Oh, right. Mm-hmm. So. Well, yeah, I never did. I didn't. That's the least fun is scraping everything off.
Well, the prep work is the worst part of painting for sure. That's why everybody skimps on that part.
Yeah.
But that's what makes it suck if you didn't prep it right.
That's right. And they, of course, don't want to go back.
Yeah, exactly.
I just want it to be over. during quarantine, which was actually kind of fun because then I had people at my house all the time because I had some shelves put in. And then the one time it rained in 2020, after like 3 days of rain, I looked and I was like, oh, there was bubbling on this one, you know, window frame.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that's not good. I'm going to show the guys when they show up. And we all stood around and the guy's like, you know, this is really bad, right? Because that water's coming from the roof.
Yeah.
And oh, shit.
It was that thing where like slowly but surely, thing after thing, where I ended up having to re-roof part of my roof.
Oh, really?
Repaint the whole thing. They had to put the electrical in. It was like a whole, once you pull that thread, you're screwed.
I know.
It's amazing. But it was nice because then guys were showing up every once in a while. I was like, hey, what's up? I had a little bit of company.
Like companions.
Yeah. Some paid companions.
There you go.
It was nice in quarantine.
I don't know why it affected me so much when I was a kid, that movie, The Money Pit, where Tom Hanks.
Because it's so hilarious.
Shelley Long movie. And everything's full. I remember it stressing me out. It's like, because you get so excited. They buy this fancy house. And it literally topples over on them. It was fucking horrifying.
So funny. The part where he falls through the floor, we lost our minds. Because that movie and like...
Oh, and the carpet is keeping... So his body, he can't get out.
He's in like a little carpet pocket in the floor. And Shelley Long is like, get out of there, whatever. It's so funny. And we were... I was probably like 12 or something.
Yeah.
And it was on cable. And we watched The Money Pit probably 15 times because we were just like, it's on again. Everyone gather around.
They need to make movies like that again. I'm like, bring back those silly comedies.
For real.
Yeah.
Or make Tom Hanks do slapstick again. He was so like the man with one red shoe. I remember him making me laugh so hard without even saying anything, just by falling over. And to think that he just became this Oscar full-on serious actor.
He's an Oscar guy. We're like, we love big.
Come
back to your roots.
Eat your tiny corn.
Come on, you son of a bitch. God, that guy.
I would. If I saw Tom Hanks, I'd call him son of a bitch right to his face.
Son of a bitch.
He'd love it. He would love it.
Eat that tiny corn, you son of a bitch.
Tom Hanks went to Sac State, which is the college I was kicked out of, attended for a year
Bragger.
And a half. But he was in the drama department. So, and that's, most of my classes that I didn't fail were in the drama department.
Yeah.
And, they talked about him all the time. It was just like, I mean, rightfully so, but it was like everybody worshiped that guy. And they all talked about what an obvious talent and what a natural talent he was from the beginning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
And then you're like, how am I doing?
Compared to Tom Hanks, what would you say? I remember there was one acting teacher and he went around. One of the things near the end of the class was he would go around and tell you your type.
Oh.
And I kind of didn't know what it meant per se, but it was like, so he was just like, you're a leading man and you're da da da. And he goes, Karen, I think you'd be the mother.
Oh.
And then he just moved on and I was just like,
you're like, no.
I got to get out of here. You'd be the mother.
My drama teacher did not care for me. He was just like, here's a broom. Go sweep. Go sweep backstage.
My older sister was like, the drama teacher loved her. And then 6 years passed. And then I was in there. I just wasn't taking the craft seriously. And she could tell.
Yeah.
She could tell. I was a real disappointment to that drama department.
Yeah, but... guess who's out here doing it, guys?
That's
we are.
Right.
Guess who's killing it in show business? I was wearing my glasses on my head like this almost all day yesterday. And then I was like, oh, this is a very drama teacher of me. Mm-hmm. And I finally caught myself on like one of the Zooms that I was on. I was like, glasses as a headband is very like kooky middle-aged drama teacher.
For sure.
I think that might be my new... the phase I'm going into.
You're like, everyone close your eyes, picture a box.
Now you're stuck in the box. How are you getting out of this box?
Take that box, put it in a river. It's flowing. That was the shit. I was always like, what? What's this have to do with acting?
Oh, yeah.
For real.
That's why I didn't ever want to take an acting class is because I felt like they're going to make you crinkle into a ball and pretend to be a flower growing.
Yes.
Or mm-hmm. and act out things like that. And I'm like, I can't. Because they want you to play.
Yeah.
And I didn't want. I'm like, can we just go straight to the sarcastic dialogue?
Yeah, for real. I still remember there was a day in one class where they were like, everybody walk around the room like you're moving through honey. I was just like, this would never happen.
Yeah.
Like, even in the craziest play in the world, I'm not going to need to know or practice walking through honey.
Yeah.
There's just, it's not relevant here.
Yeah, yeah.
Ours was a lot of, like, everyone would cry. Just cry.
Yeah. And that's before the teacher got there.
I'd look around like, why is everyone crying?
Is everyone okay?
Just a bunch of angsty 19-year-old girls.
Yep.
Feeling things.
Yeah, that was the other. I was always scared to take a class because I thought the first thing they're going to ask you to do is point and say, cry. Cry right now on command.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't know if I could do that. I'm
it's not
too
for us. We found our place. We found comedy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's all that mattered.
I just do comedy on the road and then cry in my hotel. Just kidding.
While you're watching Law and Order by yourself in a cold hotel room.
I cry at Applebee's in between gigs.
Oh, there's always an Applebee's.
The last time I was home, my friend Adrian and I went to Applebee's. And I swear to God, that place is just, it's rock solid. I mean, you can always get something you want there. Mm-hmm. Something like, have you ever had their pub cheese? Like, they have like pretzel Mm-mm. sticks with pub cheese.
That's good.
It is, I mean.
I have had that.
You're like, it's cheese, baby.
It's probably 7,000 calories. No joke. It's like the worst thing you could be eating, but it's so awesome.
How do you like a tub of cheese?
Yes. I'm a fan.
They also have like their low-cal. I went there with my sister in Spokane, the whole family, and she got some I'm on a diet plate, and it was in the middle of it. This is so gross. It was not just a hair. It's like someone took one of those old brushes and just took the hair from a brush.
No.
And put it, yes, and it was in the sauce. And she's like, there's not just a hair, but... It looked like a malicious, fuck this job.
Oof.
And I'm so tired of working on this low-cal plate.
Yeah.
And the guy, it was so funny to watch the waiter like backpedal and be like, well, it could be the basting brush. She's like, well, this is actually, and the guy's like, oh my God. It was just clearly a ball of hair from a brush. And then he rushed back. There's no way someone didn't get fired. It was like a malicious dropping of a hairball.
That's so gross.
And I haven't been... Hey, no offense to Applebee's. You're right. They are usually solid as a rock. But man, this time, it was just some renegade that was working in the kitchen. Who knows what happened?
Yeah,
it happens.
He was on the lam. He ran from the law and he threw a hairball in a plate. And we just happened to be wrong place, wrong time.
Wait, we've gone far too long without asking Fortune. You were married a year ago, but you just celebrated your wedding.
Yeah.
A couple weekends ago.
Oh, okay.
You did, yeah.
How'd it go? What will you tell us about it?
I sure will. Yeah, we got married a year ago in October, you know, very quickly. We planned it in like 3 weeks, got an Airbnb and had like five friends that were in our bubble come. And we Zoomed our family. So it was really, it's not how we planned it, but it was a really awesome, beautiful day. But I think our families were pretty bummed, like, not to be there, and we couldn't really invite many friends. And so we always said that we would have something, you know, in like a year or whenever it was like safer to do so. And I think our families were like, yeah, whatever. Sure, you will. And we're like, no, we really are. So it was always our plan that like we basically like our reception part of the wedding would be a year later. So we... Yeah, we rented out a place in Palm Springs, this restaurant, and had the reception part of the wedding a couple weeks ago, and it was super fun. We had Nina West, who's a drag queen from RuPaul's Drag Race.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Came and did this, like, a lesbian medley, lip-syncing medley. Like, it was, like, Closer to Fine and Sarah McLachlan songs and, like, Melissa Etheridge, like, Come to My Window. It was so funny seeing this hilarious drag queen sing all these lesbian songs, and everyone was like shouting the words with her. And it was just like a really fun, like it was dancing and karaoke and people were just having a ball. It was, the restaurant was perfect because it was like indoor outdoors. So it wasn't, you didn't feel all COVID-y.
Yeah.
And our families came and I think it really was special to them. They felt like, you know, finally they were kind of a part of our celebration and our a little bit more of our part of our marriage. And it was really awesome. We even had a, we're friends with Natalie Maines from the Chicks, formerly the Dixie Chicks. She sang the last couple songs with Jax and I at karaoke.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
Yeah, we sang a Goodbye Earl because that's how Natalie and I met a couple years ago, singing that together for a Comedy Central thing. And then we because Nina had only sang us a couple snippets of Closer to Fine, we ended with Natalie singing Closer to Fine and everybody was just laughing, like singing the words and dancing. And it was so fun. Just like one big love fest the whole night.
That's amazing. Okay. Natalie Maines has one of the best singing voices of all time.
Oh my God. Incredible. Easily. Yeah. I made friends with her like 4 or 5 years ago and, you know, LA is a weird place where you never really think that you'll stay in touch with anyone or that anyone famous is, you're like, oh, they're probably flaky. I don't really have like famous friends per se. And she's just been like a solid person in our life who would like every like couple months we go to her house and she makes dinner and we talk and play put puzzles together. It's a very lovely friendship, you know?
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
Very normal. And so it was so cool that she came and she actually doesn't, she's not like, you always assume that singers just want to sing all the time. And she's like,
do you?
I do. I was like, if I could sing like her, you wouldn't give me to shut up.
Yeah, for real.
And she's kind of like, yeah, no. So I didn't want to like pressure her, but I was like, at the end, I was like, you have to sing the last song. Come on. And she was like such a good sport about it.
That's so awesome.
I guess it is like someone expecting us to be funny.
I guess it would be like, assuming a comedian's going to get up and tell 10 minutes of jokes.
Yeah.
You're kind of like, I'm not working, but...
But like with her voice, that was a gift she gave you because it's like, yeah, I would say the average comic, it's like, yeah, that's fine. You don't have to make jokes at a wedding or something.
We don't want your jokes.
That's cool. You can save it. But with something like that, that's like a performance that would like make the room go insane.
I think everybody was like, couldn't believe it. They were like, what? Like, because, you know, their band's like world famous for being, you know, ostracized and all the stuff that went down with them. And so like, who doesn't know who they are? So, and she's such a formidable person. So I think everybody was just blown away. Like, oh my God, this is the coolest thing ever.
That's awesome.
And, but you know, she showed up as a friend, as our friend. It was like really special.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
So you had already been married. Did you have like a wedding planned and then COVID happened? And then you're like, let's just legally do it.
We had been engaged at that point for like 3 years, 2.5 years, something like that. And so we always were like, oh, we're going to get married in like late 2020. We didn't have like a date set. And we had just started to look at venues and stuff. But we knew we never wanted a traditional wedding. We never wanted like to walk down an aisle and to do any of that stuff. We kind of always thought we'd just have a party. Mm-hmm. So we weren't like sweating the details of it, because we're like, we'll just rent a space and have a party. So in early March, that's when we were like looking for spaces, and then the pandemic hit, and then we were like, well, I guess we're not getting married anytime soon.
Yeah.
And then we just kind of chalked it up to like, I guess we're not getting married this year. But it was like bumming Jax out, and because we were reaching a certain age that I think she thought we would both be married by. And,
totally.
And I understood that. And so I think what kicked us into gear was, and this, it sounds silly, but at the time we really didn't know what was going to happen, but Ruth Bader Ginsburg died.
Yeah.
And as soon as she died, I think every gay person felt this like, oh shit, kind of feeling. because we, you know, the election was looming and it wasn't looking good at the time.
Yeah.
And we were like, what if we can't get married next year? Like, so we just really, honestly, we were like, I think we got to get married legally because we know we want to get married, but like, we don't want to have missed the boat if something happens.
Yeah.
Our other guest, Ian, did that. I love the idea of having two weddings, the wedding for the two of you.
Yeah.
And then the party for everyone else and family and everything.
Mm-hmm. I actually highly recommend it.
Yeah.
I really do. We never set out to do that, but the vows part got to be totally about us. And, you know, we had a couple friends there and there was no family drama. It was just like everybody just had this beautiful afternoon in the middle of this dark year. And, you know, we got to just like enjoy the day. And then once we had the party, we weren't as worried about we weren't sweating the small stuff because we were like, we're already married, you know? So it just got to be a true celebration. We still kept it small because of COVID times. So we didn't like go all out like we might have normally, but it was what we had was perfect for us.
Love that.
Yeah.
Also, I hate so much that people's rights are threatened because one, you know, liberal justice dies. It's just these times we're in are so fucked. And on top of it, like mid-pandemic, you guys have to worry about something like that.
I know. But
I'm glad you did it, you know, like I'm glad you got it done.
Well, everyone's like, you know, people are like, oh, you don't have to worry about that. Like gay marriage isn't in jeopardy. But there are a lot of things that, I mean, there are things that you thought aren't in jeopardy that come up and you're like, wait, are we revisiting Roe versus Wade? Yeah. Like what's happening?
There's a lot of shit in jeopardy that's like people need to stop being shocked about it and start going, we got to do something about it.
Yeah, no, you know, with a 6-3 or whatever it was that the Supreme Court? I don't know. It's very much not in our favor.
Right.
The Supreme Court. So, you know, they just nominated Amy What's-Her-Face.
Yeah.
And you go, well, that doesn't bode well for us. And you got these other ones over here that you don't know what, you know where two of them stand. The other guys, you're like, I don't know what you're going to do. So you just never know. And we just were like, how much would it suck to have been together for 6 years and missed her window to get married? So we were like, let's not take the chance. And luckily, you know, there was a huge silver lining once the election hit. But also we're so happy that we did it how we did it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was good. And then, you know, you feel bad, like picking the guest list is like the biggest nightmare. You're like,
it's the worst.
Because we knew we had to keep it small and the venue, you know, we can only have so many people with COVID times. And you're just like, oh my God. And now I'm like thinking of people. I'm like, oh my God, I forgot about that person. But it's just part of it.
I think you should do a third one.
Yeah. Yes.
I just have multiple people do it with their birthdays. It's my birthday month.
For everybody.
A wedding decade.
Somebody said on my Instagram, they're like, I feel like you've gotten married 5 times. I'm like, I get it. There's a lot of celebrations.
Yeah, each one just has a different theme. No, we never did have a traditional Halloween costume wedding.
Well, because with Instagram, you're always like, this is the anniversary of when Jackson and I met. This is the anniversary of our wedding. This is the anniversary of a year after our wedding. You know, it's always like, because you just need content, baby.
Yeah.
That's right. You got to celebrate something. Now you get a dog. Throw that up there.
Yeah. It's either multiple weddings or start inviting your friends and family to each year's honeymoon or the anniversary.
I'm like, we need that Instagram content. Let's celebrate.
SponCon.
Yeah. Get your SponCon. Your Palm Springs SponCon.
Mm-hmm.
Did you go to any of those casinos in Palm Springs while you were there?
I've been to them before, but not this time. It was a whirlwind, the whole thing. Even our families were like, whoa. Like, because we did like the rehearsal dinner, even though there was nothing to rehearse. We took our families to dinner and stuff like that. Our friend Paige had a little brunch for us on Sunday. It was very cute. So there was like some people were not bored. There was something to do at every second.
It was an event destination wedding reception.
That's right.
You did it. And were you in Town and Country magazine?
No.
You're like, debutante fortune themester celebrated her. All your debutante friends show up and it's a surprise.
They did put our wedding pictures in People magazine a year ago. And a friend of ours for a wedding gift had that People magazine picture with the big People stamp printed onto a pillow and sent it to us.
It'd be funny if it was a body pillow for you to share.
You can hug your own relationship.
We just have this pillow of us with the People magazine stamp. And then on the other side is we have these pictures that we post of a wave crashing into us on our wedding day.
Oh, that happened to you?
Yeah, it was. So after we got married, we took a bunch of really beautiful photos. And our wedding photographer, this photographer was like, killed it. She killed it. And the very last shot of the day, we go, let's go by the water and do, like, there's these stairs to the water. We're like, let's get this stair picture by the water. We got, like, this gorgeous photo. And our wedding photographer popped up onto, like, a rock. And so she's like on a rock and we're like posing on these stairs. And all of a sudden, Jackson and I feel something like a shadow. We both go like this, like, and then all of a sudden we get pummeled by a wave. This giant wave came out of nowhere, pummeled us. And it missed our wedding photographer. Like, she had our entire day's photos on her camera. Somehow it just missed her, but she caught the entire series of us posing.
Oh, that's
seeing
awesome.
It coming near us, it smacking us, it engulfing us, it leaving us.
Oh my God.
And then
that's
us
amazing.
Soaking wet. It was so funny.
It's like hard not to have mixed feelings. It's like, you just took pictures while that was happening. I'm glad you captured it. And it's a sequence on the, please let it be a body pillow.
I posted it on Instagram, the series of photos, and the friend picked one of the photos.
Oh, that's so great. Cause that happened at my sister's wedding too. It was the same thing. They weren't fully bombarded by a wave, but got married on the beach in Carmel, and then a wave came, and all of a sudden we're all in waist deep water, and the arch and the chairs and everything started floating out to the ocean. We're like, oh, we're littering chairs now, and everyone went in to grab. But it was right at the end.
But thank God it was truly the last shot of the day. Our friends were upstairs, and we come upstairs just drenched, and they're like, what happened? What? We're like, we got wet.
Yeah. You don't all have water balloon fights at your weddings?
What if that photographer put you there on purpose? She's like, this is going to be amazing.
This works every time.
She might have. She was that good. She would know.
She was a true pro.
She was one of those people that, like, I don't like a lot of photos of myself, and every photo of hers, I was like, oh my God, I'm gorgeous. Oh my God.
Yes.
So, yeah.
I love that.
It's always a good idea to get married at the ocean.
Yeah.
It's just so, you know, symbolically, and then it's beautiful. But of course, something's going to go wrong.
We got baptized.
We got baptized.
We got baptized. We, you sinners need to be cleansed of your lesbian love.
Yeah, it's like a baptism.
It was a baptism.
That was the Lord saying that this is not right. Yeah. He wants to sweep y'all out to sea so you can start again. but yeah, I want to get them printed out and put in some sort of frame, but with all of them like in a series next to each other.
Line the hallway. That can go over all the bubbling and the poorly done prep work.
Yeah,
we might need that. That guy's never coming back.
No, he is
not. I'm sure of it.
There's no way.
He's like, see you Monday or never.
uh, Do you want to plug anything else, Fortune, while we have you here?
Yeah, all these theater dates coming up.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I'll plug two things. If you haven't seen my Netflix special, Sweet and Salty, it's Sweet still on that platform. But I'm on, yeah, I'm on a huge stand-up tour right now. I'm going all over the country, and it's a whole new hour. So I have tickets at fortunefeemster.com, but I probably am coming to your city. So check it out. It's been really awesome. I'm doing these really beautiful theaters, and people are so just ready to laugh. So every show is like, the energy is like nothing I've ever experienced before. It's really cool.
Yeah.
Yay.
Yeah. That's so great. Come to a show, y'all.
See Fortune Feimster live. It's a true experience. I've seen her at Akbar. Mm-hmm. And if it's anything like that, then it's amazing.
It's amazing. It's a whole hour of that.
Yeah.
And I assume you're doing some more churches turned into theaters.
Yep. I'm hitting up as many theater churches as possible.
Perfect.
Yay.
Thanks for being on, Fortune. It's good to see you again.
Thank you, guys. It's always fun talking to you.
Congrats on your anniversary and also wedding.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Congratulations. I owe you a gift. Oh, actually, I'm going to get your address after this because I have one to send you.
Oh, you do not owe.
Yes,
you,
I do.
We didn't even register. We were like, we don't want people worried about us.
If you send me the stills of that, the wave crashing, I'll make you an animated GIF. Because I think it'd be really funny to just be able to replay it.
I like that Karen looks like a head right now.
I was going to say, I look like a stock photo of someone looking at porn on their own computer. I didn't turn any lights on. It's now like pitch black at night.
So funny.
And I didn't turn any lights on. But when we started, it was fully light.
It was fully light. It's getting dark early.
I just like the idea that there are stock photos of people looking at porn. Now we all have to look that up on Corbis or Getty.
Do you know what your children are doing at night? One of those photos.
Yes. Yeah. For a news package.
My expression would be like, salacious, but surprised.
Yeah, but winking at your own computer. Thank you so much for being on Fortune.
Yes. Yeah, you guys. Thanks for having me. You're the
great
best.
Great to see you, friend.
Bye, guys. Great to see you.
Good to see you. You've been listening to Do You Need a Ride? DYN. AR! This has been an Exactly Right production.
Produced by Annalise Nelson.
Engineered by Stephen Ray Morris.
Mixed by Ryo Baum.
Theme song by Karen Kilgariff.
Artwork by Chris Fairbanks.
Follow the show on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Dynar Podcast. That's DYNAR Podcast.
For more information, go to exactlyrightmedia.com.
Listen, subscribe, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Thank you.
And you're welcome. I had to do that.